Chapter 5. The Springhawk was waiting precisely where Thrawn had said he would be. A quick shuttle ride across, and within an hour of arriving in the system, Ar'alani and Wootra-O were sitting in the briefing room with Thrawn and Simakro, reading through Thrawn's data and proposal. Ar'alani took her time looking through the material. She read it a second time, as she always did such things. Then, just to make sure it really said what she thought it said, she read it a third time. By the time she lifted her eyes from the Questis, she saw that Wootra-O and Simakro had made it through as well. The two officers were gazing at the sections of the table in front of them, their expressions a mixture of surprise, disbelief, and apprehension. She shifted her gaze to the end of the table. Thrawn was waiting patiently, trying to hide his own anxiety.
"Well," she said, setting down her Questis. "It's inventive, I'll give it that."
Some of Thrawn's anxiety faded away. Apparently a lot of his concern had been centered on how she would react.
"Thank you," he said. "With all due respect, Senior Captain, I'm not sure that was a compliment."
Simakro spoke up.
"The plan may be inventive, but I don't think it's physically possible."
"Actually, Mid-Captain, I've seen it done," Ar'alani said. "Back at the Academy, Captain Thrawn pulled off this same maneuver."
She raised her eyebrows.
"On the other hand, that was a patrol ship. This time you're talking about a heavy cruiser. Big difference."
"Not as big as it might seem," Thrawn said. "True, the Springhawk's mass is greater, but its thrusters and maneuvering jets are correspondingly more powerful. With proper care and preparation, I believe it can be done."
"And you're sure this is the right system?"
"The indications are there," Thrawn said. "I won't know for certain until I've examined the mining station."
Ar'alani pursed her lips and picked up her Questis again. It certainly wasn't going to be easy. The place Thrawn proposed to infiltrate was what was colloquially known as a box system. Unusually strong electromagnetic fluxes wrapped around the outer edges, interacting with solar wind, to create even more obstruction to hyperspace travel than usual. Unless a ship was willing to come out of hyperspace outside the cometary belt and spend days or weeks traveling through space normal to the inner system, there were only a dozen reasonably safe inward pathways. Even more intimidating was the fact that some cataclysm millennia ago had seeded the inner system and much of the outer system with large meteors, making the entire area a sort of miniature version of the chaos itself. Taking those additional navigational hazards into account, the number of safe lanes to the inhabited planet dropped to exactly 3. 3 routes to one single, isolated planet, unknown to the Ascendancy, and apparently unconnected with any known species in the area. A somewhat larger selection of pathways to the outer asteroid belt, which consisted of several tightly packed clusters and a number of possibly abandoned mining space stations. But while the mining stations might be abandoned, the rest of the system was active enough. Thrawn's brief reconnaissance had picked up a fair amount of travel within the system, mostly between the planet and a handful of colony or manufacturing stations orbiting it. Unfortunately, the Springhawk had been too far out to tell whether or not those ships were similar to the destroyed refugee ships whose records Thrawn had now shared with her and Wootra-O. And just to add spice to the whole thing, all 3 of the entry routes were being patrolled by small warships of a completely different design.
"So you think this is the system the refugee ships came from?" she said, looking up at Thrawn again. "You further think they're under blockade by these other ships?"
"Less a blockade than an interdiction," Thrawn said. "You can see the patrol ship's configuration is mainly designed to control access to the main planet.
The asteroid stations aren't as heavily guarded, and are therefore more accessible.
But they are still guarded, Wutra-O pointed out. And I'm only counting three good paths in and out of the system.
Only if you want the planet, Thrawn said. If you want the asteroid station I've indicated, there are several other workable vectors.
At least until the blockaders get a few more ships, Orellani said.
Indeed, Thrawn agreed.
It therefore seems to me that if we want to do this, we have to do it soon.
How long did you sit out on the edge observing them? Orellani asked.
Only 3 days,
Simakro said.
A full 3 days, Thrawn corrected.
Long enough for me to analyze their patrol pattern and learn how to penetrate it.
Again, unless they've gotten more ships in the past 15 hours, Orellani said.
Thrawn's lip twitched.
Yes.
For a few moments, the conference room was quiet. Orellani gazed at her questis, pretending to study it, weighing the options. For anyone else she knew, 3 days wouldn't be nearly enough to analyze an alien patrol pattern, let alone figure out a way through it. But for Thrawn, 3 days probably really was enough, Simakro's doubts notwithstanding. Orellani couldn't have come up with a plan herself this quickly, but she could see that Thrawn's had a good chance of working. On the other hand, this was hardly going to be a sleepwalk. Thrawn's proposed course should get them in well ahead of any pursuit from the handful of patrol ships watching the outer system. But if the blockade's commander detached some of his closer-in planetary forces, he might catch the two Chiss ships in a pincer.
What about the exit strategy? She asked. We'll need one immediately, and you'll need one eventually.
There, we have two interesting options, Thrawn said.
As if, Orellani thought wryly, this whole thing didn't come under the heading of interesting.
The typical box system is bounded, for the most part, by external flux patterns interacting with solar wind. These two points, he tapped his questis, mark the outer system's two gas giant planets.
Orellani smiled tightly as she saw it.
Planets which carve out small holes in the solar wind as they travel along their orbits. Holes you can pop in and out of without confusing your hyperdrive or your Skywalker,
Wutra-O said.
Ha! Hard to hit from the outside, though, unless you've got really good planetary data. But not as difficult going from the inside, Orellani said, since you know right where the planets and gaps are.
She looked at Thrawn with sudden realization.
That's how the refugee ships got out past the patrols, isn't it?
That's my assumption, Thrawn said.
And now, of course, we've also got the planetary data we need,
Wutra-O added.
So we go in through shadow number one and exit through shadow number two?
Exactly, Thrawn said. And the Springhawk can subsequently leave through either. They're close enough together for your purposes, but far enough apart that the blockaders won't be able to sufficiently guard both, if they even wish to do so.
Unless, as we all keep saying, they found more ships,
Wutra-O pointed out. Thrawn nodded.
Yes.
Okay, I'm confused,
Wutra-O said, frowning at her questis.
You don't blockade a place unless you want to take it over. I'm sure it's a great place to live, but why would anyone else want it?
Box systems have some advantages, Simakro said. As we've already noted, they're easy to defend and don't get much random traffic passing through. As such, they're ideal as supply depots, staging areas, and maintenance facilities.
But easy to defend also means easy to bottle up,
Wutra-O pointed out.
Our unknown opponents do display a certain degree of arrogance, Thrawn said.
Something we'll be able to use against them when the time comes. He looked at Orellani.
If the time comes, he amended.
Admiral? Orellani pursed her lips. It was a gamble. But then, so was all warfare.
All right. Let's do it, she said. Pick your spot, and we'll rendezvous there.
She lifted a finger.
Two things first. Before we head out, I want your Skywalker and her caregiver moved to the Vigilant. You're going into danger, and I want them safe. You can do a jump-by-jump to get out, and then rendezvous with us to get them back.
I agree that Skywalker Ciri should join you, Thrawn said. But I'll need Thalias to remain with me.
Orellani frowned.
Why?
The alien clothing and the positioning of the bodies suggest the males hold their females in high esteem, Thrawn explained. If I have a female with me...
A moment, Senior Captain,
Utro'o put in, frowning.
What do you mean, from their clothing and body positions?
Thrawn shook his head.
I wish I could explain it, Senior Captain, he said. I can see it. I can understand it. But I can't really put it into words. The point is that if I have a woman with me, I believe any guards we encounter will be less likely to attack before listening to our explanations.
I thought you said the mining stations were deserted.
I believe they were, Thrawn said. But as Admiral Orellani pointed out, it's been 15 hours since our last observation. It's mostly a precaution.
And you really think a woman can talk them down?
Utro'o persisted.
How? Let's skip the how for a moment and focus on the who, Orellani said.
She could sympathize with Utro'o. She'd certainly had her share of trust-me moments with Thrawn. But she also knew there was a point at which he simply couldn't put his analysis into words.
Thalias is a civilian, which limits what you can order her to do.
I believe she'll be willing to volunteer.
That's not the point, Orellani said. If you want a woman to accompany you, there are plenty of female officers to choose from.
Thrawn shook his head.
I need the Springhawk to be at full combat capability in case something goes wrong. That means every officer and warrior at their posts.
Orellani shifted her attention to Simacro.
Meet Captain, she invited.
Unfortunately, Senior Captain Thrawn is correct, Simacro said reluctantly. We're not exactly short-handed, but we have more than our fair share of inexperienced personnel aboard. If Thalias is willing, she's probably the one who should go.
Orellani looked back at Thrawn.
You really think you can prove this is where the refugees came from if you get aboard that station? Even if there are no people or bodies or anything else aboard?
Absolutely, Thrawn said.
There'll be designs and patterns that will quickly settle the question.
At which point, what? Orellani had no idea what B'Keef's plans were once Thrawn located the origin of the destroyed ship. But figuring that out was his job, not Orellani's. Her job was to work with Thrawn to get the proof B'Keef needed.
All right, she said. But only if Thalias is willing. If not, she stays with the Vigilant and you choose someone else.
Understood, Thrawn said.
Whenever you're ready, Admiral. I have the coordinates for our rendezvous prepared.
The Springhawk was ready. Or at least it was as ready as Simacro could make it. Simacro himself? Not so much. He could appreciate that the Council thought this mission was important. He could also appreciate that Thrawn's plan was probably their best chance of slipping into the alien system and gaining that data without having to engage either the inhabitants or the ship's riding herd on them. That last point was crucial. Ascendancy policy was to do whatever was necessary to avoid preemptive combat against potential adversaries. An incursion into someone else's territory, even just to gather data, drifted perilously close to the line. The faster Arlani could get the Vigilant in and out, the less chance either Chiss ship would need to fire its weapons.
Vigilant? Thrawn called.
Be ready.
Arlani's voice came back.
Vector locked. Maneuvering jets charged. Let me know when to go.
One moment,
Thrawn said, leaning forward a bit in his command chair as he gazed at the tactical display.
I need Blockade 4 to move a little farther in its orbit. There. Stand by countdown. 3, 2, 1.
There was the subtle shift in the deck vibrations as the Spring Hawk moved forward. Simacro peered up through the bridge canopy, confirming that the Vigilant was also in motion and staying in perfect sync with the smaller cruiser. In perfect sync, and way too close for comfort. Simacro scowled. In theory, the plan was simple. The Spring Hawk would fly alongside the Vigilant, staying close to its hull and hiding in the bigger ship's sensor shadow, until they reached the point where the cruiser would slip away and duck inside one of the asteroid clusters. The Spring Hawk would go dark, hopefully undetected, and let the Vigilant lead away any pursuit. In practice, the whole thing was a disaster crouched to spring. Thrawn had opted not to use cables to connect the ships, pointing out that a small error in either ship's vector would create a visible ripple that an alert sensor operator might spot. Tractor beams were impractical for the same reason, plus the added disadvantage of generating a possibly detectable energy signature. Connecting the two ships with maglocks, allowing the larger ship to simply carry the smaller one, would show a blatant mass thrust discrepancy. So instead, Thrawn was going to attempt the kind of close-in flying normally associated with air shows. The problem being that he was attempting it with a cruiser and a night dragon, instead of the smaller and far more maneuverable missile boats.
Pitch shift on one, Thrawn called. Stand by countdown. 3, 2, 1.
Simacro tensed, waiting for the inevitable collision. To his relief, and mild surprise, the inevitable didn't happen. Both bows tilted upward at precisely the same time, and to precisely the same angle, and the ships continued on.
Blockades 1 and 2 are reacting,
came a voice from someone on the Vigilant.
Increasing speed and moving on to intercept vectors. Time to intercept,
Arlani asked.
Projected intercept 3 minutes after Spring Hawk disengages. Thrawn?
Arlani asked. Thrawn didn't answer. Simacro looked over at the command station to see his commander working his Questus.
I suggest a 2% increase in speed, Admiral, he said.
2% confirmed,
Arlani said.
Course changes?
The next two can run as scheduled, Thrawn said. I'll need to recompute the others.
Understood,
Arlani said.
Speed increase and starboard turn ready.
Acknowledged, Thrawn said. Stand ready, speed increase. 3, 2, 1.
There was a slight sensation, as much imagined as felt, as the Spring Hawk increased its speed.
Stand ready, starboard turn,
Thrawn continued, as the two ships settled into their new vectors.
3, 2, 1.
This turn was larger than the earlier pitch maneuver, shifting them a full 7 degrees. Once again, the two ships stayed in perfect formation.
Get busy on those revisions,
Arlani warned.
Support side change is scheduled for 3 minutes from now.
Acknowledged,
Thrawn said, his fingers skipping over his questus. They'll be ready when we need them. Zamacro peered out through the canopy, feeling sweat gathering beneath his tunic collar. The more course changes they made, the higher the odds that one of the ships would make a mistake, and the whole illusion would pop like a bubble. But Thrawn had insisted on piling complexity onto their incursion, arguing that a steady, straight-in vector might raise suspicions of a second intruder, while multiple course changes should allay any such concerns. The other option being the conclusion that whoever was in charge of the mission was crazy. That was certainly the one Zamacro himself was going with at the moment. The minutes ticked by. One by one, the course shifts were recalculated and factored in. Zamacro watched the tactical as the two ships continued inward, listening to the sensor officer's running commentary on the status of the pursuing blockade ships. A third had joined the party now, angling in from a direction that would bring it into clear view of the Springhawk nearly a minute before the cruiser was scheduled to break off. Thrawn and Ar'alani discussed the situation, and once again the Chiss ships increased their speed a few percent. Zamacro continued to watch and listen, keeping a close eye on the Springhawk's weapon and defense monitors, just in case Thrawn's plan degenerated into a battle. And then, suddenly, they were there.
"Stand ready to break off," Thrawn said. "Admiral?"
"Standing ready," Ar'alani said. "Blockades 1 and 2, now 4.5 minutes from intercept. Blockade 3, 90 seconds from visual. We'll continue on for 3 minutes, then head for Shadow 2 and hyperspace. That should give you enough time to settle in."
"Acknowledged," Thrawn said. "We can make do with 2 minutes if you need to break early."
"I'll keep that in mind,"
Ar'alani said.
"We'll wait for you at the rendezvous. Good luck."
"Helm," Thrawn called.
"Standing ready, sir,"
Asmordi confirmed.
"Prepare to veer off," Thrawn said. "Stand ready. 3, 2, 1.
With multiple puffs of compressed gas, the Springhawk angled to portside, moving away from the Vigilant on a vector that would take it across the edge of the nearest asteroid cluster. Zamacro held his breath, focusing his attention on the tactical display. If the blockade ship spotted them, the charade would be over. He twitched reflexively as the Vigilant, now pulled ahead of them, put on a sudden burst of speed, shifting its angle as if Ar'alani was trying one last maneuver to try to get to the planet in the distance before her pursuers reached combat range. If she was able to keep the blockaders' attention on her for a few more seconds, they might pull this off. The slowly wobbling asteroid that was their goal loomed ahead of them. With another blast of cold gas, the Springhawk braked to a halt beside the asteroid. Another carefully tuned pulse, and the cruiser had matched itself to the asteroid's slow spin. Zamacro looked at the tactical, noting that the blockade ships were still fully invested with chasing down the Vigilant.
"Full stealth mode," Thrawn ordered.
All around them, the bridge displays and monitor boards winked red and then went dark.
"We appear to have arrived undetected," Thrawn added calmly.
Zamacro took a deep breath, making one more visual sweep to make sure all non-essential systems had been locked down.
"So it would appear," he said, matching his commander's tone. "How long do we wait?"
Thrawn looked past him at the stars, now tracking slowly across the sky.
"We need to allow the Vigilant to escape, and the blockade ships to return to their picket positions. A few hours, no more."
Zamacro nodded, and then it would be time for Thrawn to slip over to the abandoned mining station floating halfway across the asteroid cluster, where they would find out if this whole gamble had been worth the effort. The Vigilant Skywalker was named Abeg, and she was only 8. But she had some interesting moldable play figures and some really nice colored graph markers. And she had a lot of building snaps. Way more than Chiri had. They were starting to play with them when Abeg's Momish told them to stop.
"It's reading time, girls," the woman said. "Put away the snaps and get your questuses. Come, come, come. Toys away. Questuses out."
"Do we have to?"
Abeg asked in a whiny voice.
"We want to play."
Chiri made a face. A whiner. Great. She hated being around whiners. Still, Abeg had a point.
"We just did some trips,"
Chiri spoke up.
"We're supposed to get some rest now."
"Ah, feces,"
the Momish said, wiggling her fingers like she was throwing away Chiri's words.
"You did 2 trips, maybe 2 hours each. I've seen Skywalkers do 10 hours at a stretch, and come up smiling and ready for more."
"But..."
Abeg started.
"Besides, reading is resting," the Momish said. "Come on, come on, questuses and chairs, now!"
Chiri looked at Abeg. If they both insisted, maybe they could talk themselves into at least another few minutes. Chiri had started a really neat design with her snaps, and wanted to finish it before she forgot where all the pieces were supposed to go. But Abeg just sighed and put down her own snaps. She stood up tiredly and went to one of the chairs.
"Chiri," the Momish said. "You too."
Chiri looked at her snaps. This woman wasn't Chiri's own Momish. Maybe she wasn't allowed to tell another Momish's Skywalker what she had to do. But Chiri had had a couple of Momishes like her. Arguing with them hadn't usually gotten her anywhere. Besides, Abeg was looking at Chiri with pleading in her eyes. Chiri might get away with defying the Momish, only to have that annoyance come back to dump on the little girl after Chiri was gone. She'd had a couple of Momishes like that, too. Nothing to do but go along with it. Making a face, she went over to where she'd put her things, dug her questus out of her pack, and climbed onto the chair next to Abeg's. She would never admit it to Thalias or anyone else, but she hated reading.
"There you go,"
the Momish said. Now that she'd gotten her way, she sounded a little more cheerful. They always did.
"Reading is very important, you know. The more you practice, the better you get."
"It's not study time,"
Abeg said.
"We don't have to study, do we?"
"It's study time if I say it's study time,"
the Momish said sternly.
"Which you know perfectly well. When our ship is on a journey, we never know when you'll be called to the bridge. So we have to study when we have the chance."
She looked at Chiri.
"But since we have a guest, and her classes won't be the same as yours, no, we're not doing studies. But you still have to read,"
she added, as Abeg started to say something.
"Whatever you want, 30 minutes. And then you can play until dinner time."
There was a ping from the hatch.
"Enter,"
the Momish called. The hatch slid open, and Admiral Aurelani stepped into the suite.
"Everyone all right?"
she asked.
"Do you need Abeg?"
the Momish asked.
"No, it's all right,"
Aurelani said, holding up a hand and smiling at Abeg as the little girl put down her questus.
"I expect the Vigilant to stay where we are for the rest of the night. If we have to go anywhere, we can do a short jump by jump. So no, you girls can relax."
She shifted her eyes to Chiri.
"I mostly came by to tell you, Chiri, that Thrawn and the Springhawk have made it to the asteroid, where they'll be hiding for the next few hours. They are safe. And it doesn't look like anyone saw them.
Okay,
Ciri said. She still wasn't fully clear on what all the fancy flying had been about, but she was glad the Springhawk was safe.
Thelius is with him, right?
Yes, she is, Aralani said,
her voice sounding a little strange.
But I'm afraid you'll have to sleep here tonight. I'll have an extra bed brought in for you.
She can sleep in my bed,
Abig said, sitting straight up in her chair.
It's big enough.
Ciri cringed. She'd never, ever had to share a bed. And with an 8-year-old?
I'd rather have my own,
she said. She looked at Abeg's suddenly disappointed expression.
I kick a lot when I sleep, she added.
Can you put the bed in my room?
Abeg asked. She stopped and looked over at the Momish.
I sometimes get scared,
she finished in a little voice. Ciri winced, feeling guilty. After talking with Thelius about nightmares...
That would work,
she said.
Sure, we can take some figures with us and play before we go to sleep.
Caregiver? Aralani asked. If it's all right with Abeg, it's fine with me.
The woman actually smiled.
I remember having sleepovers when I was their age. Pretty sure I can whip up a few snacks for them, and we'll make it an event.
Sounds reasonable, Aralani said.
But,
she raised a warning finger,
when your caregiver says it's time for lights out, girls, it's time for lights out. If we need you, we don't want you so tired you'll accidentally steer us into a supernova.
Yes, ma'am. We will,
Abeg promised, her earlier excitement starting to bubble up again.
Anything else we can do for you, Admiral?
The Momish asked.
No, Aralani said. I just wanted to let you all know what was happening. Have a good evening.
She gave both girls a pretend frown.
And get some sleep.
The frown disappeared. She smiled again and left.
This is going to be fun,
Abeg said, bouncing a little on her chair.
It'll be fun, right?
Sure,
Ciri said.
We'll make sure of it,
the Momish promised.
Right now, it's still reading time. Half an hour, and the sooner you start, the sooner you'll be done.
You want to read a story about tree people?
Abeg asked, holding her questus toward Ciri.
There are lots of good pictures.
Ciri wrinkled her nose. A picture book? She might not like to read, but she was way past picture books.
That's okay,
she told the younger girl.
I've got something else I'm supposed to read.
She said we didn't have to study.
This isn't studies,
Ciri assured her.
Go on, get busy. I want to get back to those snaps.
Okay.
Settling herself cross-legged in her chair, Abeg propped her questus on her knee and started to read. Ciri picked up her questus, her eyes straying over to the low table where Abeg's colored graph markers were scattered. Her last Momish had told her graph markers got all over everything and wouldn't let her have them. But that was her last Momish. Maybe Thelius would let her get some. She'd ask her once they were back on the Springhawk. If she could get some graph markers and some paper, she could do some real artwork. Looking back at the questus, she punched up the list. Along with the familiar storybooks, some of which she'd read more than once, she spotted a longer one. Some stories about Mithron Yerodo. She frowned. She'd completely forgotten about the file Thelius had sent her. It was pretty long, and there were bound to be big, complicated words. But with Thrawn and Thelius and the Springhawk in danger, maybe reading some of it would help her feel better. Thelius had seemed to think it would anyway. And just because she started, It didn't mean she had to read the whole thing. Settling herself comfortably in the corner of her chair, she braced herself and opened to the first page.